I think I'll entitle the message, Appropriating Christ. An alternate would be not I, but Christ. Maybe I'll put that for the chief message title, sake of the tape, Not I, but Christ. Not I, but Christ is the whole heart of this message. I feel this is such an important message. I feel that somehow tonight we must get what this message is saying. And we must get it with a desire to implement it. I'm going to bring a little bit of theology, light theology, and then I'm going to try to explain by example how to appropriate Christ in each given situation. I was sharing this in part with a young mother Thursday night at the end of the prayer session. And although she had been around here a while and trying to take care of her children and live her life, it seemed, she said, it sounds so good. And I says, it is. It's wonderful. It seemed like a dream that was so wonderful if it could only happen. My friend, it can happen. She said, I hope that I can get there someday. I said, it takes about 12 seconds. And that's the truth. It takes longer to get perfect at it. Galatians 2:20. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Now it sounds like a verse of paradoxes, and it is. Spiritual paradoxes. I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. This verse speaks of the mysterious mystery of the believer who is crucified with Christ and who is in Christ. This one is crucified, yet he lives. But that is exactly what happened to Christ. He was crucified, but he lived. And so Paul says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Now, he was not crucified literally as Christ, so he must mean it in a spiritual way. He is saying that the old man Adam is crucified, but the new Adam, the new man, Paul, lives. He is dead to the world and to self, but he is risen with Christ. I live. I live. Yet it's not I. Yet it's not I. I love. Yet it's not I. I preach. Yet it's not I. I live, but my life is another Christ. My heart is another. It's not the old Saul It's Christ. I live, but my power is another. My power is not Paul. It's Christ. I live, but my actions are not mine. This isn't how I act. This is how Christ acts through me. Here we see the surrendered will. Here we see that mystical union of the man of the flesh who has a spirit within that can reach the everlasting spirit, God, in union with God Himself, His spirit with God's spirit, a mysterious union, so that in this union of the two spirits, the man's spirit being yielded and willing and worshiping, uniting with God's spirit to work it out and live in the flesh, in which we are tabernacling or tenting until the day we roll our tent up and are called up home. This is as a life of one heart. Man and God, but two with one heart, His heart. Man and God, but with one mind, His mind. Man and God, but with one purpose, His purpose. This is like seeing two trees, and they both are side by side, and they look identical. They're the same height. They both have fruit on it. And your eyes face these two trees down, but then you see a mysterious union as they come together and they unite just above the ground. And they go into one trunk. They draw one food. They both come from the same source. There's a union. They're one. They're two, but they're one. You've never seen two trees on one branch, on one trunk, in which one had pears and one was a fir tree. They are alike. He says he lives in the flesh, yet he lives by faith. We're living in his flesh, but we're living by faith. In other words, he's saying, I trust Christ. I trust God. And as Christ shall know, I'm talking about Him as God. Within. He is within me, and I am trusting Him within. So I live by faith. I am trusting Him within to be working in this tabernacle. I have faith that I can do all things through Christ. And I have faith that He can do all things through me. Now, He is not just saying I can do all things through Christ's death by reason of it. He is not saying I can do all things by the position which I occupy in Christ. But I can do all things through yielding to Christ. Through the Christ that lives within me. That is, by allowing Him to work within me. He is the guest of my house. And He knocks at my heart's door. He has made this house, and He has made me to be the owner and the manager of this particular house. And although He is the builder, and though He is the one who has given and furnished the house, yet having given me to be the manager of it and the owner of it and the occupant of it, He will not force Himself into my house. If I design, build, and pay for a house and give it to my son and his wife, I will not force myself into their house because I build it. And he stands at the door and knocks, and he comes in as a guest. And if you ask him to be quiet and let you decide things in the house, he will, even though he is more intelligent than you. But if you invite him to share his wisdom because you lack it, he will be glad to help. If you have some work to do and you say, I'll do it, he says, well, can I help you? And you say, no, I'll take care of it. Then you will struggle with it. But if you ask him, he will be glad to help you. The Holy Ghost that is within us must be yielded to. Now, yielding is faith plus willingness. To yield, you have to believe and be willing. Faith in God is like being talked in when you are a pilot trying to land in an airfield in a dense fog. And in the military, they have to land their bombers when they come back from missions and their fighters in intense fog if it's stocked in 100%. And I've talked to several pilots who have been talked into blanket fog, fog bank, and down on the strip, there is a particular beacon that is sending a signal at a particular angle to the airfield out into space ahead of the strip. And that plane is equipped with a piece of antenna in the nose that picks up this signal. And the pilot comes in, and he come in and requests permission to land, and he can't see anything. And as in an airfield up in Newfoundland, I think Greenland, I think it was, that they told me about, I'm not sure now. But anyway, there were great big cliffs on both sides, rugged, and you had to come right in between the cliffs and land. And they're coming in, and you can't see a thing. And you think you must be about ready to run into the ground. And they say, you're too high, 10 feet, correct. And you just feel like you're going to run right into the ground if you drop another 10 feet. And it just doesn't seem like the right direction at all. And you have to now have faith. No one on the ground can hear your engines and can see you on the scope, and they've got a beam, and they know where you are, but you can't see one thing. Now, the Christian life is like that. God is sending the beam out to you. And your spirit is the antenna that's picking it up. And you're out there in the fog, and you don't see the way out ahead of you for your life and your ministry. And he says, you're 5 feet high. Correct. Too much ego. 5 foot too much ego. Correct. 5 foot too much self-righteousness. Correct. 5 foot too much fanaticism. Correct. 5 foot low, correct. 5 foot too much flesh, correct. Too much sin, correct. And you have to be right on. And you're flying in there at 140 knots with an airplane that weighs 200,000 pounds or so. And you're flying at a pretty high speed between two bluffs and you're heading for the ground at an angle. And you hope he knows what he's doing because, see? And you kind of feel like maybe I should be pulling back. And he says, no, down. He says, down. It must be up. He says, down. You got to do exactly what he says, or you won't make it. That's what faith is like. Or faith is like leading the blind. Faith is like leading the blind. Mike, save me, come up here. Mike will be the blind.
Wow. Stay forward. Step. 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 Up. Big step. Big step. Big step. Big step. Big step.
It's kind of scary. Because that step's coming up and down, and you hate your... When he says big step, you want to take three times. You don't want to really move out when God says move out. You want to take a little one and try it first. You're leading a blind man, but you can see. And it seems like, particularly somebody who hasn't been blind all their life, you know, somebody who just had an accident or something. And it seems like that the curb should be coming up any minute, maybe it's 30 yards off yet. And he's doing this, you say, come on. And he's doing this, you see. That's what faith is like. If you can move out in it. I mean, that's what walking by faith is like. It's difficult. But we have got to walk by faith because there's somebody who can see that's got us by the hand. And we're blind. Spurgeon had a dream when he was contemplating on this subject one time of faith. And he had a dream, and it must have been from the Lord. But he dreamt that there was an inky black darkness. And he heard a voice in front of him saying, step out by faith, my son, you must start walking. And so he started to walk. And he walked very slowly because he couldn't tell where he was going to put his foot down. And he didn't know what the road or the path was like. And he said, step out, my son, walk. And the voice was ahead of him. And he began to follow the voice along, and pretty soon he noticed it wasn't so difficult because he got used to putting his foot out, planting it, and after a while it was going easier. And then he found the path beginning to turn. And then he had to be more careful. And then it turned again. And then there was rocks, and it began to be rocks. And then he wasn't so sure with it. And it turned, and it kept turning, and it wound, and it got tortuous and winding. And he never knew what was next. And he began to realize that God wasn't leaving the path straight because he'd get used then to just going by feeling of putting his feet down. And he kept letting it turn so because he had to have faith in him and learn faith. And then all of a sudden it started to go downhill. And it began to drop step after step after step down, down, down. And he began to go down these stairs and winding and twisting and turning. And pretty soon he found himself near the bottom. Walk, he felt there was a balustrade on both sides he could hold his hand on. And he walked along and it was a little easier, and he began to realize that was experience, was giving him something to lean on. He could lean on experience now because he had begun walking for a while in faith and trusting as the voice beckoned him on. And then he began to go into some muck and some mud, and his feet began to go down, and it seemed something he wanted to draw back, but the voice said, you must come on. And so because the voice said, this is the way that I have called you in, and it's difficult, and it's dark, and it's murky, and it's muddy, he had to go in through it. And he went through all of this mile, as it were. And all of a sudden, his path began to change and climb upward. And he began to climb. And it was still dark as midnight. And up he climbed higher and higher. And every step was in the complete darkness. And he found himself weary. And the voice beckoned him on and said, keep climbing, keep climbing. So he kept climbing up and up and up. And then he broke through into a light. And he stopped and he looked back. And the light shined down, and he could see the whole pathway that he had come. And he found, although his heart was in fear, doing all the certain amount of fear all this time, a little trepidation and uneasiness and all the strain and the stress of it all, the weariness, yet he found it was a safe path the whole way. But he found that had he seen the path all ahead of time, he would never have undertaken it. But because he didn't know everything he was going to have to go through, and he found himself going through it, he could do it a step at a time. Now the Lord must have given that dream, because it's right on to human life in walking with God. Now here we find in Galatians it says, he has died with Christ, crucified with Christ, dead to the law's dominion. The law has no more dominion. It will no longer bring him under the power of that law to judge him. We find that it's no longer, he's dead to that thing. We are not living in a legalism, but in a life of grace and mercy and forgiveness by God, who took our place in the legal position because we couldn't make it legally. He did it legally for us. And then his grace shone forth for us. But I cannot live godly, many say. That is true, but Christ within can. I submit that Jesus knows how to live godly. He's proven that. And if he lives within you, he can live godly. Is Satan too much for Christ? Is Satan temptation in you too much for Christ in you to handle? Christ handled him in the wilderness, all right. He was in a much worse position than you, both in the weariness and the length of it, the temptation, and in the tempter. And he came through with flying colors, as we say. Surely, if we yield to him in our life, he can see us through. I find that I get into trouble when I release the flesh to do his bidding, because my flesh is strong to do its own will. And if it's contrary to God, I get into trouble because I let the flesh do what he wants. But if I let this move into the Spirit, then I find I don't have to worry about the flesh. I find that as am I moving in spiritual circles and I'm yielding to the Lord, I don't feel fleshly like doing fleshly things. I have no trouble with the flesh. I only have trouble with the flesh if I do not move in the Spirit and decide to let the flesh have his appetite when he cries for it. The Christian overcoming life is essentially Christ manifesting himself. And this is done by the Christian appropriating Christ. Appropriation means simply taking it, to appropriate it for yourself, to make it yours. To appropriate it means you have decided that it's yours, you believe that it's yours, you know you can take it, you decide to take it and you make it yours, to you, that's yours. That's appropriating it. Now, the failure of us Christians to meet the crisis in our lives is because we fail to appropriate Christ. He dwells within, make no mistake about it. That is not the problem. But because he is a guest in our house, we must ask him, we must appropriate him. Though we live in a double world, there's two worlds, the material world and the spiritual world. And our spirits live in the spiritual world, and our souls and our bodies live in the material world. We are the beings of two different worlds at the same time. Now, the material world is the world of our senses. We sense things. You sense things. You feel things. I sense something. I sense it. You have five different nerves, type of nerves in your fingers. One of them senses heat. One of them is a basic feeling. One of them senses something fine, like an ostrich feather, real fine. Pick up that real soft, furry thing. One of them senses itself in space. You can do this, and I can still touch my ear. It knows its place in space. It's a fantastic computer system, and you can't fool it. If everything's in line, it can find it every time. Back here, see? God has given those different nerves. It's a world of senses. But the spiritual world is a world of faith. It is not connected to your sensations of your body. You can't taste the Spirit of God. You can't smell Him. You can't see Him. You can't feel Him. See? It's a world of faith. There's no sensation in the physical of it. Therefore, you will not go by feeling in the spiritual world because it's not a feeling.
You say, brother, I felt the Lord. Yes, you have nerves in your body, and you are a soul, and your soul and your therefore your body will be affected by your spirit plugging into God. But the spiritual thing cannot be sensed with a physical sensation. There's no way to tell when God's coming by God's spirit, because you can feel Him or taste Him or hear Him or see Him or feel Him. You can't do that. So when I heard Him, yes. If He wants to come and He wants to speak to your ear, you can hear Him. You don't hear Him, you can put it in your mind, but that's not one of those sensations. Now, what is faith? I said the spiritual world is a world of faith and not sensation. So we walk by faith in God's word and not by feeling. And everybody said, amen.
Amen.
What is faith? Faith is trust plus action. What is trust? Trust is confidence in God. You know who He is and what He's capable of. You therefore have confidence in Him. That's trust. Then what is faith? If it's confidence in God and it's action, what is faith then? Well, then what faith is taking God at His word, because you believe in Him. So you put in action, which means you take Him at His word. Then why don't I? That's a good question. Then why don't I? Because you haven't decided to. But I have decided. I remember saying, Lord, I have faith in You, and I will follow You, and I'll do what You say. And I meant it. Then you haven't passed on that decision to the mouth and the hands and the feet. You haven't passed it on to them. You say, well, what does all that mean now? Because a person doesn't really pass on information to his hands and so forth. Well, yeah, you do, through your nervous systems. You do. You do. Your will does. So there's something wrong when you say, I have decided to, but my hands don't do it. Because you have a will that if you send the signal, He will do it. You never send Him the telegram. You never got on the telegraph wire. You decide to send the telegraph, but never sent it. You never gave Him the information that you decided to. What it all means is this. It means that you decided, when you were in a service, that the next time you were confronted with a problem, you would follow God. But when the problem was healed, you decided not to. In other words, you did not decide you will do it now. You decided you would do it then. That's the problem. We decide today that tomorrow we will do it when we went into trouble. But tomorrow, when we went into trouble, we don't decide to do it now. Because you can't send a signal to your hand to do something tomorrow, today. You must keep deciding now. And you must keep believing now. God is always the God of the now. I am now. Today is the day of salvation. Always with God. Exhort one another daily. See? Today, if you will hear His voice. He never says tomorrow if you'll hear His voice.
Faith is seeing God working now. Faith is seeing God working and the action of it. It's seeing it. Faith is seeing God in you overcoming. I mean, seeing it happen and knowing it's happened. Before it happens and while it's happening. We must kill the sin, I mean the serpent, that is in us, or it will kill us. Now I want to briefly explain how to appropriate Christ. Most all of us have done this in certain areas. Some of us haven't done it enough to be very familiar with it. Some of us have done it quite a bit. Someone help me out here.
I don't just think to make you thirsty either.
Now, let's examine how this works. Let's say that you are a young mother, and you have a little child, and you're trying to do some work around the house, and the little child is constantly blabbering on, all the little things that they say and going on and doing things and hoping, moving around and so forth. And that child is getting on your nerves. Wait, there's a problem right there. He's getting on your nerves. Now, if you had appropriated Christ, it would be different because that child doesn't get on Christ's nerves. That's the first problem. We have allowed ourselves to be high strung and worried and fretful rather than appropriating Christ and trusting Him. And so he's getting on our nerves, that little child. And as the little child is doing that and producing a strain, and they say, "Mommy, hey, mommy, mommy, about this mommy," and you say, "What?" I'm glad God doesn't talk to us about that, like that, don't you? Oh, Lord, oh, Lord, oh, Lord, I need you. What? Now what? How would you like that? If we would appropriate him, maybe we could answer them and hear them like he hears us. Because God is not nervous. Now, this little child, and it's doing something, you say, "What is the matter with you?" Now, if that little thing could argue like your husband can, you don't need to tell you, "Well, my problem, Mommy, is I'm a second you." "My problem, Mommy, is I have you in me, and my problem is I do just like you. I'm trying to live my own life and so let Jesus live my life for you, like you all. Excepting I haven't learned how to bottle it up yet. So I let it out because I'm just little." Here's a need. What do you think he's doing that for? He's doing it for a reason. Now, you're all at wit's end because you're not trusting God in your life. And there's people worrying you, and things worrying you, and you worrying you. And so, when you say, "No, no, no, don't touch it. No, I said to stop it." And you know what happens?
Do you think they heard that?
Bill Rum? All day long? You have to get after them and after them and after them, and they won't let you, they won't just do what you say. But now, let's suppose we decided to appropriate Christ. And we said, Lord, no, Lord, Lord, I need your help. Self, shut up and stand still. And see the salvation of the Lord. Now, self, think. Start to think a bit. That little one has some kind of a need. He's somehow trying to get through to him, and you're not giving him any time. There's something wrong here someplace. Now, that little soul is my life, you know. It's a precious little thing, and it's frustrated in some way. And maybe it's not doing right, but now I want to just, Lord, get my old flesh out of the way and allow you to meet that need. Now, Lord, right now I appropriate you because you live within, and my will, just a decision to let you answer through me and to yield to you and just to allow your sweetness. You answer, Lord, and you give me your spirit. Now, your spirit answer. Now, Lord, it's not going to make any difference now. A minute ago, everything was so tight and tense, I couldn't even talk peaceably. I was so high-strung. But now, Lord, I just believe that you're going to take everything in my life. You're going to take care of me. This day is going to pass. I'm going to lie down in bed, and things are going to get all right. In the morning, I'll get up again and go on. And 5 years from now, that today won't even be important. You will take care of me. I'm not going to get swamped. You will work out the problem between me and my brother or sister or whatever, and we'll go on in God. And there's no reason for me, Lord, to show all this flesh. And Lord, if you within, then I'm going to decide to let you answer. So Lord, I don't really care now about all these things. I just want to meet the need and show the love to that little one. That little one is naughty, but it needs love. Like I'm naughty and need love, Lord. So I'm going to do unto others as they want you to do unto me. Watch, sweetheart, he changed. And it starts with something wrong. And you pick it up and say, no, 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 sweetheart. Don't do that. That would make Mommy feel awfully bad. Mommy said, no, doesn't want you to do that. And if you do that, then Mommy's going to have to spank you. And I don't like to spank you because I love you. I don't like to have to spank you. But I'm going to spank you because you're going to have to learn. Don't do that, okay? Set them down. You know, they even feel like, they even feel now like obeying you. Because you see, the secret is, that is a little soul. Just like you, it has feelings like you. Just a smaller brain and less wisdom. But it's a soul. It has feelings, emotions. It's not just a little thing to yell at. It's a little thing that's frustrated. And you begin to, you see, and you do this and you feel, well, there's no big problem anymore. It's no big problem. You're just going to love it. And you can find out that that little child will cause you less trouble all the rest of the day. Because you know why that little child was getting into trouble all day? It was wondering if you really loved it. You were so busy folding clothes and talking with the neighbor on the phone and doing other things that it began to feel unloved, and it was pestering you all day long with a million questions, a million things. It was getting in all your clothes baskets, it was scattering your clothespins all over the floor. It was doing everything because it was trying to get some attention. And the more you yelled at it, the more frustrated he became and didn't even understand what his own problem was. And it needed you to come to his rescue, like we called a God to come to our rescue. And we cry, I don't know what our problem is, and he comes to our rescue. I remember when I was teaching a seminar here on disciplining children, and afterwards, one of the mothers said, by letter to me, she said, I began to apply
what you said in disciplining my child. And she said, it wasn't very long. It made a fantastic difference in my child's attitudes and behavior. And my little child would come up and throw its arms around me and says, Mommy, I love you. It began to feel a love for her that she never had. Before, it began to feel kind of alienated. And even said one time, Mommy, you're mean. You see? But now, the child said, Mommy, I love you. She began showing him love and found it was a better child all day long and more wholesome and happy. She began to appropriate the truth concerning this and showing love. And see, people respond that way. And so here is a case where you can just be free of these things. Your husband comes home, he bursts in the door, and he says, and you've had a hectic day. I mean, everything went wrong that day, see? And the plumbing, the dish, and the washing machine didn't work, and you had things overflowed, there's problems, and you have a hectic day, and dinner wasn't ready like it usually is when husband comes home. He walks in the door innocent, sees nothing on the table, and he comes out with an innocent question, because he didn't know you've had a hectic day. And he says, how come dinner's not on the table? And you say, well, that does it. I've had a rough day. Yeah. Like a bear with four sore paws. And you know how it goes until about 11 o'clock at night. I hope not. But you see, she could stop and say, wait, Susan, that's her name, hold it, self, whoa, girl, now, my husband loves me, he's the love of my soul, I gave myself to him, we want to have a wonderful love retreat, I hope that we can have a nice night tonight. I want to be kind to him. He asked the question. He must have had a reason to ask the question. She can answer softly. He might have had a rough day, too. The boss may have been after him all day long and criticizing him and all the rest. And he may be frustrated. A little bit in the flesh besides. He's like you. And so you might say, well, honey, I just haven't had a chance to get to it. Everything just went wrong today. And he would say, what is supposed to be ready when I get home? See? Now, that's unreasonable. But wait, why is he being unreasonable? He's being unreasonable because he feels miserable inside, and he's had a rough day, and he can't think objectively right now. If he doesn't appropriate Christ, one of you should. One of you should. And so then, you know, You can hit him back with your ego, or you can say, Jesus, you answer him, Lord. I don't even feel like answering, Lord. You answer. It's a complicated question, Lord, anyway. The answer's long and difficult. I don't want to go through the whole day again. So you can say, honey, I'm sorry. I had a rough day and I wasn't able to do it. And then when he comes out again with more of these words, you know, that are unreasonable, he needs to say, I'm sorry, honey, you're right. I should have had it ready, regardless of anything else. I'm going to try to be a better wife to you. I'm terribly sorry. You know, it's a soft answer turns away wrath. And all of a sudden, he said, well, it seems to me that you could have been able to do it. He says, yes, you're right. You know, honey, that's right. I should have been able to. And I guess I just wasn't as good a wife today as I should have been. And all of a sudden, he doesn't feel like blaming anymore. And he says, oh, sorry, I'm trying to do better. He says, well, that's all right. He's softening all right. He's coming down, see. Otherwise, you're hitting him and he's going up, see. It is so wonderful to be able to appropriate Christ. And he lives within.
want to be sweet. And you go home, and you're ugly in your behavior. You see, you admit it. You say, I want to be that way, but I'm just not. You're not appropriating Christ. You say, well, I'm going to really try. I'm going to try so hard. I'm going to be, this time, I'm going to bite my tongue, and I'm going to really try hard. And you get yourself braced, and here comes, you know, into the door, you know. And so you're all ready, and you answer soft at first, but it doesn't come back soft. You stiffen a little bit, and you answer soft back, and it comes back kind of harsh, and you answer soft back, and it comes back harsh. Boom! You see? You say, I failed. I tried to. I just couldn't do it. I just can't live this Christ life. And that's right, you can't. You try so hard and you fail every single time, because the flesh can never be spiritual. You can never act like Christ. Only Christ can act like Christ. So you don't do it that way. You don't try hard. Don't you try? You yield. You appropriate. You appropriate. So you say, Lord, you do it. From now, right now, Lord, it doesn't matter now if I'm misunderstood. I'm not going to care if I'm misunderstood. I'm not going to try to defend. I'm not going to present a good image of myself. I just want to please that other person and to love them and to show them your love. I turn it over to you. Now, you do it, Lord. Thank you. It doesn't make any difference now what happens, because it's all you. You know, it'll be easy now. It's so easy. And you feel like a bird let loose out of a cage when you do it. My, it just seemed like it was so easy. Before, it was so hard. Because your ego had to win. Now you don't have to win. You don't have to defend yourself. You don't have to be right. You don't even have to be understood. And so with that, it becomes easy. And then you just answer. And the person comes and he blames you. And you say, well, really, that wasn't how it was. But if you think so, why, I apologize. And more words come back, you know. And you say, well, what do I tell you? I just decided to turn my life over to God. And the Lord knows my life. And I'm doing the best I can. I know it's not good enough. But if you feel that I've wronged you, I'm sorry. I really, truly am. And I love you. And if you pray for me, I appreciate it. Will you forgive me? And maybe you know you're right, and he's wrong. You say, well, if you feel I'm wrong, brother, will you forgive me? Say, I truly mean it. I don't want to offend you. I don't want to do anything to hurt you. And I thought I was doing what was right. It seemed to me it was right. And I don't understand why it's wrong. But I'm not going to try even to convince you. If you feel that way it is, why, I just don't want to hurt you. And if there's anything I can do for you, I'll do it. Can I take it back? Can I give you this instead? What can I do? Is there anything you tell me, and I'll be happy to do it. And you know, you just melt that heart, and you win a friend. And you help him, and he can't be mad. In fact, about an hour later, he'll come back to you apologizing, because inside, way down here, he knew he was wrong in the first place. This is appropriating Christ for your life. It's a practical thing. Now, I submit that we can never be Christ-like until we appropriate Christ. And we've got to do it daily, day by day by day by day. I'll try to wind this up in about 2 minutes, if I can, because I'm finished with my message here. This is the essence of what I'm talking about. In every given situation, you stop and say, Lord, if my problem is ever going to be solved, it will not be solved by me, but by you. I'll tell you how to do it. You come down to the altar with an opportunity to pray. And you've got bitterness in your heart for somebody. You've had struggles. You've had strife. You've got problems with your family and so forth. And you're all tied up and you feel miserable and you haven't done right. And you feel like God, you couldn't reach God with a 1,000,000-foot ladder, you know. You feel like he wouldn't even hear you.
You feel miserable in your soul, or you feel like praying, and you come in and you kneel down to pray. Now, what you do, if you begin to try really hard, you try hard and you pray and you pray and you say, I just can't seem to get any place. I've been trying. But you know, you can't get any place by trying. That isn't how you get any place with the Lord, by trying. What you do is stop and say, now, self, remember when you were walking in sin, in the depths of sin, and you first came to Jesus Christ, and you knelt at the altar, what did you do? Try really hard? Get everything all smoothed up and taken care of? No. All you did was say, Lord, blubber, 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 cry and all this. I can't do anything. I'm a complete failure. I don't know how to do anything. All I know is I give up. You can have my life. I just believe you because I got to believe you. I don't even know anything about you, really. I have to believe you. I'm doomed, so I just believe you. You can have it all. I'm just going to trust you for my life. And you get up, and the load of sin and all the worries and cares are gone. Why? Faith, trust, plus action. I just have to trust you, so here it is. I just yield. You can have it. I just appropriate you, and I'm going to walk away and forget about all my life of sin and misery and how I'm going to get from here to there. I don't even know what you're supposed to do. Well, I'm not going to worry about it. And all of a sudden, everything's fine. That's the power that saved you is the power that will continue to save you. The power that delivered you is the power that will keep you delivered. And you do it on the same basis. You come back and you say, Lord, I can't reach you. I can't do anything. But I'm just going to give up all this. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. I'm not going to worry about the situation. Lord, it doesn't make any difference anymore. I just give it to you. If it's going to be solved, you're going to solve it. So I now assign it to your department. I'm through with it. You can handle it better than I can. And I'm not going to worry. And whatever happens, I'm going to just answer. Let Jesus answer through me. And I'm going to just go on and take whatever comes in any form it comes. And I'm just going to live for you and just do let you do all the speaking through me and just rest. And you know, you'll get released, you'll feel wonderful, you won't carry the burdens, you'll feel marvelous, you'll go on your way and everything will be fine. I prayed for a young lady here Thursday night. I began to speak that in her ear, and she had so much problem she couldn't reach bottom. In a few minutes, she was free and praising God, and just because she did exactly that, just said, Lord, I can't do anything, I don't like this, I give it to you, I'm going to quit worrying about it and trust you. You see, it's only faith, trust plus action. Appropriating Christ. It has nothing to do with you trying hard. Nothing to do with you trying to get your life, everything all ordered and worked. And you can try your legalism.
No, I'm just opposing.
You can try your legalism. And in your legalism, you can say, no, I'm going to pray every morning from this time to this time, and I'm going to do this. And then you, I missed that by 15 minutes. No, now I feel terrible because I didn't pray like I said. I was going to pray, but oh God, I can't even see. That's legalism. You don't pray because of those reasons. You set this time out every morning to pray. That's fine to set a time because you just won't get it done if you don't. So this is the time for my prayer and to teach my children. I do it because this is life, because it'll be good for them. I come to church because it'll be good for me, not legalism. And if I miss it, well, I'll try to. It's just like any time you miss a meal, do you? You make it up when you can. And you go on your way. You don't worry about it. God didn't condemn you because you didn't get that done in that time you said. You don't work on that basis. You do it because it's good for you. It's a relaxed life. You do things on those bases. And don't order your life and try to live in a legalistic way. You get all tight and bound up. Just walk free in the Spirit. Say, Lord, I do these things because it gives me life. Gives me joy, gives me power, because it's good for me. And I just trust you for everything. Keep freeing the Spirit. Don't worry about anything. Say, Lord, it's you. It's you, see? Be concerned about things. Do what you need to do. Do your job right. Don't be slothful and busy. Be diligent. And then trust God to take care of it all. Now,